All right, Parshas Zav, Parakhes, Pasuk Gimel. And you'll excuse me if my words are slurred, or if I can't think straight. If you ask me a question, I may not be able to answer it. It says, Parakhes, Pasuk Gimel, Parshas Zav, it says the following. It says, V'eskola Eda HaKel, Al Pasuk Ol Moed. The entire Eda of Moshe Rabbeinu was able to gather together by the Ol Moed itself. He put them all together. The very next Pasuk is to Kahel, and they were all gathered. They ended up being gathered by the Ol Moed itself. The Panach Raz says, brought by the Ramban elsewhere as well, this Pasuk took place on the 23rd of Adar. Okay, 9 days from now, not on Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Even though these psukim seem to be out of order, that's okay, because we know that there's something called Ein Mokdim Mocha B'Torah, there's something which the Torah is out of order. This happened on the 23rd over here. On Rosh Chodesh Nisan, that's when Moshe Rabbeinu set up the Mishkan for the last time, or allowed Aaron HaKohen to become the Kohen Gadol. That's when he started doing his Kuna service. Up until that point, Moshe Rabbeinu was doing it. This was not with Aaron. Aaron was not doing anything here. This is with Moshe Rabbeinu. And therefore, that's the end of Parshas Tzav. It's also the end of Parshas Tzav. And therefore, it must have been the 23rd of Adar itself. So that's okay. That's out of order, but it happens to be that way. That's the Panach Raz and the Ramban himself. The Netziv asks what the purpose of this Kehila was, gathering all the people together. See, I can understand why everybody would get together when Aaron was first made into Kohen Gadol. That's awesome. You want to see Aaron become the Kohen Gadol, which had never been seen before. That's an amazing idea. You start your tenure, so you go through. But for 7 days, all they were watching was Moshe Rabbeinu, who was not a Kohen, standing there, putting up the Mishkan, taking down the Mishkan, putting up the Mishkan, taking down the Mishkan, and doing it over and over and over again. That doesn't make any sense. Why would they watch that? It's not like there's anything new happening. It's not like they're watching Aaron HaKohen do anything. All they're watching is Moshe Rabbeinu himself. It seems like there's nothing there. At least when the Levium were made into Levium, they wanted to see something. There was a smicha going on. There was a tenufa where Moshe Rabbeinu waved all the Levium. There was something to watch. Here it seems like there was absolutely nothing. He put up the Mishkan, took it all down. What are they watching? What are they doing over here? So the Netziv says that there's a really important lesson over here, and it teaches us something awesome. Although we normally say that the Ikar is Torah Shebichsav, there are certain times, I guess you could say, where Torah Shebaal Peh trumps Torah Shebichsav, where the rabbis say something, and even though the Torah tells us something different, the rabbis say, no, we don't want you to do it. The classic example would be Megillas Esther. If Purim would fall out on Shabbos, you can't carry the Megillah, right, to go to Shul. Now, granted, you'll tell me that Megillas Esther, according to all Rishonim, aside from maybe one Rishon, is a Derabbanan, not a Delraisa. But the same thing applies by Rosh Hashanah, by Sukkot. We don't carry Lulav and Esrog and Shofar to Shul. That's a questionable, there's questionable why we're not allowed to do that. And we say Gzerah to Rabba. Rabba says you might come to practice the shofar, do something different, and therefore we don't allow you to do such a thing. There might be exclusions for each one of them, but they're not really d'orises, they're really asmachtas. It's a strange thing that we don't allow this, but this is the pshat. Sometimes Torah Shebaal Peh trumps everything else. Sometimes Torah Shebaal Peh is greater than anything else there. The rabbis are allowed to supersede pshat by darshaning something that's totally different. They saw with their own eyes how Moshe Rabbeinu told them something in Parshas Tetzaveh and then did something a little bit different in Parshas Tzav. In Tetzaveh was what they're supposed to do. In Tzav, this is what he actually did. And when they saw there were little differences, little nuances of difference between one and the other, they realized Torah Shebaal Peh is greater than Torah Shebichsav. They realized because they said, wait, Moshe Rabbeinu already told us what he's supposed to do and he's not doing it. It's because Torah Shebaal Peh is greater. Says the Netziv, that was the most important point over here. And that classically is the Netziv. The Netziv throughout the entire Torah is there to tell you how Torah Shebaal Peh is throughout the Torah. When you're looking at the Torah Shebichsav and you're wondering, hey, what's going on here? It's because Torah Shebaal Peh is awesome. And because Torah Shebaal Peh is so awesome, there are certain parts, especially Mishnah Torah, all of Sefer Devarim, the Netziv's introduction of Mishnah Torah is probably the greatest introduction written to any Sefer ever, aside from the Rambans and, well, there's a couple others. Mesillas Yesharim is also pretty good. But the Netziv's introduction to Sefer Devarim is an awesome, awesome introduction. Explain to you how Torah Shebichsav works into its Torah Shebaal Peh way with Sefer Devarim, Mishnah Torah, being sort of the in-between between the two. That's the idea behind it. That was the idea. It is strange. This was a small space, whether it was 100 by 50 amos or 50 by 50 amos. Either way, we're dealing with either 10,000 or 20,000 square feet. You're dealing with not so much. The Ol Moed, where they were right in front of the Mishkan itself, was a small area. How in the world were you going to fit everybody in? There's 600,000 men between the ages of 20 and 60. It doesn't include women, children. It doesn't include the older people as well. How in the world are you going to fit everybody in a small area of 50 by 50 or 50 by 100 amos? Just think about that for a second. 50 by 50 amos. 50 amos is what? 75, 100 feet? Let's say it's 100 feet. Let's go Chazanish. It's 100 feet by 100 feet. So you're dealing with literally 10,000 square feet altogether. It's impossible. There's no way they could have fit inside there. There's no way that anybody could fit inside there. Right? And obviously, Shevet Levi is not included. What? He didn't say anything. He didn't say Levi. It's just impossible. If you're talking about 625,000 people, you're trying to put it inside that area over there. I mean, if I did my, just think about it, just the way it is. If you're dealing with 10,000 square feet and 625,000 people, that's 6 1/4 people in a square foot. 6 1/4 people fitting in 1 square foot. And that's without women, children, and older men. I don't know if women end up showing up. But without children and older men. It's ridiculous. How in the world are they all going to fit there? So the Panim Yafo says, we know from Pirkei Avos that anyone who bowed in the Mishkan, right, when you were standing straight, you might have felt like you were tight, swooping. But when you bowed down, you were revachim. You felt like you had room. Everybody got their own Dalet Amos. They got Dalet Amos in front of them, and it's as if every area just expanded for them to be able to go through over there. If there were 625,000 men, you're including Klal Yisrael, just the men between 20 and 60, and Shevet Levi, 625,000 men, each one needed 4 Amos. 4 Amos to bow down. Now look what it is. The Chatzar had to expand from an area of 2,500 square feet, 50 by 50, to 2,500,000 square feet. Do your math really quickly. 2,500,000 divided by 250. What's the numbers? Or 2,500, I'm sorry, 2,500. 2,500,000 divided by 2,500. Okay, so take out the 2 5, take out the 2 0s, right? So you got 1,000. It's 1,000, right? So maybe that's why Moshe Rabbeinu blessed them, specifically said, Hashem Yosef Aleichem Kachem Elef Pa'amin. Hashem shall multiply you 1,000 times the way you are right now, because that's what he saw in the Mishkan. In the Mishkan, everybody's room expanded, and the chatzar of the Mishkan expanded by 1,000 times. So when he blessed them, he said, you should be expanded by 1,000 times. That should be your bracha. That's how the Panim Yafos puts it, the Rebbe of the Chassam Sofer, the Haflah. 1,000 times to be able to give you that bracha, and that was the bracha they ended up getting. Rashi says right over here, this is one of the places, where Hechzik Muat as a Meruba. A little bit of space was able to hold a ton of people. Hechzik Muat as a Meruba. This is from Vayikra Abba Perek Yud Halacha Tes, and it's a statement of Rebbe Eliezer ben Horkanis. Rebbe Eliezer ben Horkanis, the great Talmud of Rebbe Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rebbe Eliezer ben Horkanis mentioned this, and Rashi puts it down over here. The Rabbeinu Bachaya says, there's no question, this was absolutely miraculous. And we've seen this happen 4 times in Tanakh. I was going to challenge, but it's not the time to challenge right now. 4 times in Tanakh was like this. When Moshe Rabbeinu hit the rock by Parshas Chukas, instead of speaking to it, the Pasuk says specifically that all the people were standing right by the rock. How in the world are you going to fit all the people right by the rock? It was a miracle. Somehow they all found themselves standing right in front of the rock itself. Same thing happened by Har Sinai. How did they fit around Har Sinai? How were they able to go in front of Har Sinai? And the answer is, it was a miracle. It was a massive miracle, and they found themselves as if they were standing by Har Sinai. By Yoshua, by the Jordan River, when they crossed over the Jordan River, they all found themselves by the area, the space where the badim, the poles, stuck out from the Aron Kodesh. They all found themselves within the two poles. But how? You had all of Bnei Yisrael lined up, and somehow they found themselves within the two poles. And then finally, you have when Moshe Rabbeinu took the 2 handfuls of ash from Aaron and made Makas Shechin. They took ash and ash. He took handful, handful. Aaron had handful and handful. They put it all in one hand of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to throw up 4, maybe 8 handfuls of ash into the air. Hechzik Muadis Meruba. By all those 4 places, the same wording, Hechzik Muadis Meruba, applies. Says the Medrash. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and says, Hashem, I don't understand. You're asking all Bnei Yisrael to gather together. You're asking them all to get into this space over here. How in the world is that going to be? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu looked at him and said, do you see the heavens above? Do you see what I've done with this world, the universe itself? If I can make that, you don't think that I could fit everyone inside a small space? Don't you think I'll be able to do that? In the future as well, says the Medrash. In Tchias HaMeisim, there will be billions of people alive. Billions of people. And we all want to live in Eretz Yisrael, and everybody's going to want to live in Yerushalayim. Where are you going to have a spot? How are we all going to live in Yerushalayim? How are we all going to live in Eretz Yisrael? Billions of people? Well, how are we going to do that? And the answer is, the world, the land is going to expand. Everything's going to expand a little bit where it's going to seem like it's not. We call it Eretz HaTzvi, which aside from the fact that it means beauty, because that's obviously my name and I understand that completely, it also means that it's going to stretch out. There's going to be more room for stuff inside there. It's going to be as if it was like this and it was stretched out so that it becomes absolutely awesome with all the room around us there. Yes, Bruce. By Moshe Rabbeinu, by doing the Makkah of Makkah Shechin. So you put it aside. So we got it by Har Sinai, by the bottom of the Aron Kodesh, when they were by the Jordan River itself. We have it by Parshas Chukas, by the rock, and we have it when Moshe Rabbeinu took the handfuls of ash and threw it in the air in order to start Makas Shin, right, when he did that. So those are the four times that we have it over there. And that's that. But that's a miracle that's going to happen for us at that time. And maybe that's what it's going to be like when Mashiach comes. We'll feel like we're all close to Mashiach, even though we're really far away. Think about it. Everybody's going to try to ask Mashiach questions. Everybody's going to do there. But Mashiach doesn't have time for everybody to be able to ask their questions. So how are we going to feel close to him? Maybe the same miracle will happen. It'll be as if we're all close to Mashiach, but we have no idea how. We have no clue how it was supposed to happen. We mentioned that Gemara above, the Mishnah and Perkei Avos, that in the Beis Hamikdash, one of the miracles they had with them was, again, Omdim Tzvufim, when they stood up, they were tight together. When they bowed down, there was enough room for everybody. Rashi says this was every single day that this happened. And the reason why is that no one could hear each other's tefillos. Isn't that brilliant? Nobody could hear each other's tefillos, so you got to give space. And that applies in a shul nowadays as well, to make sure that you don't hear what the other person is davening about. Try to stand a little bit further away so you're not listening to somebody else daven. It's a very interesting halacha. We don't paskin that way. You're allowed to daven right next to somebody else. But in order to make sure that everybody has their space, you do that as well. That's what Rashi says. Magen Avos says it only happened in Yom Kippur, when the crowd was so huge and people were doing vidui and doing tshuva. You didn't want to hear what your neighbor was saying because you don't want to hear what he had to do tshuva for. So you didn't say anything whatsoever. So that's the pshat behind it. The Aruch says it applied by anyone who did Aliyah L'Regel. And when they did Aliyah L'Regel, when they came to Yerushalayim, they always had a place to stay. Based on the Gemara over there, they always had a place to stay. There was no problem whatsoever. Does it happen for us nowadays? Are we zocha to have that type of schus of Hexik Mu'udism Ruba? The Tash Bates, who's a late Rishon, early Achron, we're talking 1500s, I think, right around that time, writes in his time there were still people that did Aliyah L'Regel from Egypt or other lands that were close by Eretz Yisrael. There was a certain shul that's known as the Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai shul in the Old City today. That shul would be filled from one end to the other. And the Tash Bates says the people were made in front of them. They testified in front of them. There was no way that there was enough room to hold everybody, but somehow everybody was able to fit in. Somehow everybody had a spot and everybody was there. He says this is a simon for the Geula Shleima in the future, that this is going to happen in the future as well. So it definitely happened. Not only that, but the Chassam Sofer writes in Shal Shu's Chelik in Yoredeya, Chelik Beis, Simon Reish Lamed Daled. Yeah, it's in Yoredeya Chelik Beis, Simon Reish Lamed Daled. He says he saw it with his own eyes in Chutz Laretz. Not just in Eretz Yisrael, not just for Aliyah L'Regel. He saw it in Chutz Laretz, but he said, I don't want to talk about it because I think people will make fun of me. Amazing, right? The reason why he was worried is because Chassam Sofer lived in the times where Reform Judaism was getting very, very strong. In fact, the Chassam Sofer coined a phrase, Chadash Aser Min HaTorah. Chadash Aser Min HaTorah is referring to, you know, new grain is Aser from the Torah until the second day of Pesach, right? So you're not allowed to eat Chadash during that time. The Chassam Sofer coined it to be able to say, Chadash Aser Min HaTorah, new things, like Reform Judaism, is Aser Min HaTorah. It's forbidden from the Torah. So Chassam Sofer was fighting against many people who did not believe in any of these miracles or anything crazy happening. The Chassam Sofer said, I've seen it, but I don't want to say where it was. So what was it? Rosh Shlomo Zalman Ehrenreich says, it's quoted by the Otzer Ploz Torah. It says it happened in his own base medrash. The Chassam Sofer gave shir in a base medrash that was absolutely tiny. And somehow there were 400 bachrim that fit in there every single day. They were able to get inside, and everybody said the space could fit 40 or 50 people, but it fit 400 people. Supposedly the same miracle happened for the Chassan Sofer as well as grandson. I'm going to tell you two things really quickly. There's a famous story that's told about the Malbim, that the Malbim one time went to go hear the shir of the Chassam Sofer. He was in the town of Pressburg. He knew the Chassam Sofer was giving a shir, so he wanted to go hear it, but he was very tired. He had been traveling, and he had just spoken, or whatever it was, and he was an older man at the time. I don't remember how old, 35, whatever. I shouldn't say older man, because that's like my age. But either way, but he was like standing inside the room itself, and it was very hot, and all the bachrim were pressed in around him, and he just couldn't take it anymore, and he fell asleep. He woke up when the Chassam Sofer came in, and everybody stood up, but he was like disoriented, didn't know where he was. Everybody's up. He couldn't even get up. That's how tight it was. He mamish couldn't even get up. And as the Chassam Sofer walked by, he was like trying to get up to give honor to the Chassam Sofer, and the Chassam Sofer put his hand on him and said, don't get up, you don't need to. The wording exactly, I forgot what it is, al tale, or something like that. Don't get up, don't worry about it. And then he went to the front and he gave his shir. The Malbim claimed, from that point on, he was never able to get higher in his depths of Torah. That he never learned anything more wasn't able to go into Iyun more than what he had gotten over there. Even though the Chassam Sofer didn't mean it at all he said was, don't get up for me, right? But with the wording of the Chassam Sofer of Al Taled, don't get an aliyah in where you are, so to speak, it meant as if he wasn't getting an aliyah in Torah, and the Malbim never went higher than that level, whatever level he was on. And the Malbim at the level of 3 years old is greater than all of us combined. But regardless, the Malbim was not able to get on a higher level than that for the rest of his life. It's an amazing, amazing line. But that was the Chassam Sofer's base medrash. And he's claiming, he says himself, that I saw this miracle with my own eyes, that I've seen it. And that it happened in Chutz Laaretz in Pressburg, which is a massive chiddush, an absolute massive chiddush. The other story is that I was zocheh to be in Rav Asher Arieli's shir in the Meir Yeshiva for years, for 4 years and what, almost 4.5 years, 4 years altogether. It's an amazing shir, absolutely amazing shir. And I remember bringing my father in Elulzman when he first come in. It is absolutely packed, crazy, crazy packed until everybody goes through. I can't tell you how many people were inside there, but I remember standing in the back, having to have like a little tiny gemara with little notes, because before I got a seat in the old, where it used to be, in the miklat of the Mir Yeshiva, I can't even tell you how many people were there. People were lined up all the way up the stairs. It was playing on the radio so people could listen to it outside. I stood in the back with little notes and be able to write down everything that I could. I was still learning Yiddish at the time, so it wasn't easy for me at all. Eventually, I got a seat, but I can't describe to you how many people could fit inside that room. It felt like there were 500 people in there. It was 100% a fire hazard. I have no idea what would have happened if Chas V'Shalom, something could have happened inside there, but this chutz of the shir, there's no way something like that would happen. Now it's a little bit, I mean, the shir is huge now. I don't even know how many bachon. The last time I was in Eretz Yisrael, I was able to peek in. I didn't want to go in and disturb, but I saw that there must be 700-800 bachon that are sitting inside in the lunchroom of the one of the newer buildings. But it's completely different. But it's an amazing, it was such an experience. And I brought my father to be able to experience it. And he said he was tightly packed. I let someone take a seat. By this time, I had a seat on the other side, but on the other side of the wall. But it's something that's so worthy of watching, of seeing. You see it as if, I wish I was by the Chassam Sofer's time to be able to see something that he claimed was an absolute miracle. Ayel Shachar doesn't understand why they lechachi would have expected a miracle to happen. Why would they do that? Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu say to Moshe Rabbeinu, bring everyone in and let's make a miracle happen? Just don't do it. You don't need to do it. Right? There's no need to do anything like that. When people entered by the Azara in the times of the Beis HaMikdash and it wasn't big enough, that's because everybody wanted to go and therefore there wasn't enough room. So okay, what are you going to do? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to have a miracle happen. But here Hashem is saying, let's make a miracle happen. Let's do it right now. Why would Hashem do that? So to speak, as if to challenge himself. Let's see if I can make a miracle happen. Why would you do that? It's totally unnecessary. So the Chassam Sofer has the exact same thing. He says the exact same thing. He said, why would you do a large-scale mace like this if it's totally unnecessary? And he suggests another lesson over here. That Hashem wanted them to getting used to mistapik b'muat, getting used to being okay with the tiny little bit that they have. It's a lesson that every single one of us can take from. We're so used to the finer things, the good things in life, that when we get something that's like not enough, we're like, I don't know if I can handle that. Be okay with what you have. Be okay with the fact that you're not going to have the greatest thing in the world. And that's fine. And that's what istapkus b'moed is. The only time that a person deserves for a miracle to happen for them is when you take whatever you have and you're perfectly fine with it. When you only worry about yourself and you look toward what you want to get and you're not looking toward your friend at all, you're not accepting your lot in life, that's when a Kodesh Baruch Hu says, like, I can't give you that miracle. I can't fill you up with the miracle that I want to give you. It's just not going to happen. And that's why Zeh Adavar Shetziv Hashem Lasos. A Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted this to be a sign for all of Klal Yisrael that when you're mistapik b'mu'at, when you're okay with the little bit that you have, and in this generation, and I get it, in my past generation, that my generation as well, being okay with what you have and not wanting more and more and more and trying to one-up and one-up and one-up yourself, right? Trying to do one thing after the other, what you're supposed to do, you have to be fine with what you have, and miracles will follow. And that's what HaKadosh Baruch Hu is promising us, that whenever you're okay with what you have, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will allow everything to be there. And even though it seems unnecessary, it seems like, why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu do a miracle? Why not do it naturally and give us everything? No, HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to show you. If he would give you with a Yad Harchava, with a wide open hand, and give you everything you need, sometimes that's bad for us. Sometimes we end up getting used to such a thing, and sometimes that's bad. Sometimes we have to have absolutely nothing at all. Offhand, I can't remember what this Gemara is. I'll think of it somewhere along the way. Rav Huna, it might have been Tainus and Chaf Amabez, maybe. Chaf Aleph Amabez. I might be a little bit off. If it's not in Tainus, I apologize. I didn't look it up beforehand, and I think it's somewhere around there. But Rav Huna, one of the stories they say about Rav Huna on Friday would buy all the extra vegetables that were in the market. Everything they had in the shuk, Rav Huna would buy them all. They'd throw them into the river. He'd throw them into the river. And the Gemara says, why not just give it out to the poor people? And he said, he didn't want to give it to the poor. Well, if you don't buy them at all, then the people who have them in the marketplace won't bring as many vegetables for next week. So he wanted to make sure there would be a lot of vegetables available for Shabbos. So he encouraged them to bring more and more vegetables by buying out the supply, right, on Friday, you know, right before Shabbos had started. So why not give it to poor people instead? He said he doesn't want to, because what if one week he can't buy enough vegetables? The poor people are going to be relying on him buying vegetables and giving it to them, so he didn't want to do that. So the Gemara goes through, like, why? What else you could do, what else you could do. But I think it's obvious over here, and I think this is a limud that you could get straight out from Rashi. He wanted Bnei Yisrael to be okay with the little bit that they have, but he wanted them to have the ability to get more. The ability is there, but you don't need it. If you don't need it, I don't need to give it to you. So Rav Huna bought it out to make sure that the ability was there, but it didn't mean that he had to spoil Klal Yisrael. It's a real lesson over here. The Or HaChaim HaKadosh says, everything happened on its own. Moshe never gathered them. Vati kohel ho'ida means, the next pasuk says, they did it on their own. It's Vayakel. Moshe Rabbeinu was told to gather them together, but they ended up doing it on their own. Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to do whatever it was, but in the end, they just did everything. They wanted to see what Moshe Rabbeinu was doing. They wanted to get involved with Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe didn't do anything at all. Rabbeinu Yosef Nechemya. I'll tell you, this is Abbez in a Krakow. He's a grandson of the Chassam Sofer, a great, great grandson of the Chassam Sofer. My bubby found, she gives a shir in Yerushalayim, and somebody in her shir gave her this set of Sfarim, and I was just by them a couple weeks ago, and I went to Eretz Yisrael, and I saw the set of Sfarim. I said, I've never seen this before. It's not in the regular Sfarim stores. They have it out there, and I took a look at it. I was like, this is amazing. So I called up the people. I ended up getting a set of this. Rabbeinu Yosef Nechemya, one sefer on Chumash, one sefer on Drashos. Amazing stuff in the style of the Chassam Sofer and the Ksav Sofer. Very much in their style. It says, it may seem like it happened on its own. It might seem like Vatikoyel Eidah, that the Eidah gathered together on their own, but it's through Moshe Rabbeinu himself. How is it through Moshe Rabbeinu? Brachos Vav Mabei says, when a tzaddik with Yerushamayim says something, his words are heard by everyone and everyone follows suit. They do it without thinking. They do it without questioning. They do exactly what it is. Ritzon Yirei Av Yaseh. The Ritzon of those who fear God, Yaseh. It's automatically done. So to hear, Moshe said they should go ahead and do something without thinking or questioning. Without thinking or questioning it at all, it was as if he said it out loud and said, guys, come. But just by Moshe Rabbeinu wanting it, Bnei Yisrael felt it and came along with him. That's what ended up happening. So even though Moshe Rabbeinu was commanded to tell them, he didn't even have the time. As soon as Moshe Rabbeinu thought to himself, okay, I have to go gather the people like, you need us, we're there. And they already went without Moshe Rabbeinu having to say something out loud. That's how awesome it is to be a tzaddik on the caliber of Moshe Rabbeinu. That's the idea about it. So it did happen automatically. But Moshe was involved in getting them to do it. And that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu asked him to do it. First Shlomo, the Radamsker, says it a little bit differently. Moshe Rabbeinu is equal to 600,000 people of Klal Yisrael. Whenever he did a mitzvah or learned Torah, they all did it with him, since their das was connected to his das. That's why the word adas is used over here, because it's telling you all together. It's really through the mindset of a Moshe Rabbeinu that everything ended up happening. He made you feel like you thought of it on your own. He made you feel like it was your own, but it wasn't. It was really through Moshe Rabbeinu's power where everything happened, and that's the awesome thing behind it. Chassam Sofer then goes on and says, it could be this wasn't a miracle at all. It could be, because there was no stretching out of his hand, right, where he did that for the Yom Suf. There was no shemos of HaKadosh Baruch Hu that he used. There was no lifting up of his staff or anything like that. Nothing. It just, simply put, he was told to gather the people and nothing else. And the people would end up being there, and even though it was impossible, it's going to happen. And the lesson, again, the Chassam Sofer says, is absolutely simple. When you do a mitzvah properly without thinking about it too hard, everything will work out for you. You go into the palace to ask the king to save your nation, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will make a miracle happen without you even thinking about it. And the scepter, the golden scepter, will stretch until it hits you all the way there. That's the unbelievable part. By doing something with that emunah pshuta, knowing I'm doing the right thing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to follow suit. And that's the idea behind it. He says elsewhere, wherever there's Asek Torah Barabim, when people are learning Torah publicly together, then awesome. Awesome. HaKadosh Baruch Hu allows you to do everything you need to do. It's klipos and tuma that makes you feel stifled. If you look at the Gemara and Brachos, Vavam and Aleph, that I mentioned earlier, Vavam and Beis, and Vavam and Aleph, what does it say over there? That whenever you feel stifled in a shir, whenever you feel there's daichka, the kala, when you feel like there's something pushing you when you're in a shir, it's the shadim that are doing such a thing. It's the mazikin that are pushing you together. When there's tuma, you feel like there's no room. When the tuma is taken away, when you do something with a minup shuta and you don't get around with that stuff, you don't get involved with that stuff, that's when everything is bahar vacha and you won't even realize it. It's not even a miracle, says the Chassam Sofer. It's automatic, the hexic mood is a marupa, that the mood will be able to hold everybody there, and especially in a place like the Mishkan or the Beis HaMikdash, what's the Shaila? It's going to happen automatically over here. I, but by Korach, says the Be'er Basad of the Parish and Rashi, it says the same thing by Korach. They all gathered right outside the Ol Moed. It says they gather by the Ol Moed. How could they gather by the Ol Moed? There's not enough room for all the people to gather by the times of Korach. Why did a miracle happen for them? So he says, it's not exactly correct, says the Be'er Basada. By Korach, he was standing by the Ol Moed, and all the people were around him. They couldn't necessarily see him. They weren't necessarily by the Ol Moed. They were around him, but the Iker was Korach was standing by the Ol Moed. Over here, it's everyone saw themselves as if they were standing by the Ol Moed, by the Pesach Ol Moed. That was a massive miracle, which doesn't make any sense whatsoever. Okay, the Moshe of Zakenim, the Rabbeinu Ephraim, the Chizkuni, and the Penach Raza all ask the same question. Why is this necessary? Why do you need to have Hexik Mu'adiz and Merubah? We sort of answered that question before, why HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted the miracle to happen. They say, why did Aaron need this? All of them are ignoring the fact that we set up above from the Penach Raza and the Ramban, that this happened on the 23rd of Adar by the times of Moshe Rabbeinu doing the Avodah. They seem to ignore that and go with Aaron doing the Avodah, that they all gather together then, and that's when it happened. I don't know why they're doing that. Maybe it's Machlokas somewhere, and I just didn't see that Machlokas or where it's supposed to be, but the Moshe Zakenu and the Rabbeinu Ephraim say, the reason why Aaron needed this over here, they showed up to show their support for Aaron in this position, to help them get a kapara from the Egel Azov along with Aaron. They all needed that kapara for what they had done by the Egel Azov. Standing up for Aaron, watching him do the Avoda, that would be a kapara for the Egel Azov, was exactly what they needed for that to happen. The Chizkuni and the Panach Raza is really to show honor and really Kedusha toward the Kahuna. They would see how awesome he was, and they would from then on treat him with the respect that the Kohen Gadol deserves. And Yom Lois even adds on, the people were not just trying to go through, they were watching what the Kohen Gadol did. Remember, Chafina is not an easy thing. Putting up the handfuls, etc. Kemitza is not an easy thing. It's a hard thing to be able to do. Holding the kalim with one hand and holding the pan in one, it was difficult to do. When they watched the Kohen do everything, even washing their hands and feet, you know, they have to wash their hands and feet, they have to wash their hands and feet together, which means the Kohen had to bend over while standing on his feet, really on the back of his feet, hold his hands right by his feet, both of them together at the same time, while somebody is pouring water onto his hands and feet at the same time. You have to be unbelievably nimble. How are you going to be able to do that? I can't do that. I'm pretty in shape, but I can't do that at all. How in the world are they going to be? And every Kohen had to do it. And then there were also certain types of bows, kida, which Levi tried doing and went lame from it. You have to bow down with your thumbs and then push yourself back up. It's like an impossible thing. When the people saw the Kohanim do this, Aaron, who was how old at this time? 83, 84 years old. They were amazed. And they treated him with ever so much more respect. That's how the Me'am Lois looks at it. So much more respect is right over there. Tzura Amor talks about this well. I meant to say this before, I forgot about this story and I put it out of order. Rav Elchanan Wasserman says that in the Chafetz Chaim, he measured the room, which the Chafetz Chaim used to say a shmuz and shal shudas right before Mariv on every Shabbos. And he said the people would pack into the room like sardines. He said they would all pack in, and there was always room to fit one or two more. You could fit in something. The whole yeshiva was in there, the whole yeshiva of Radin, as well as the Rebbeim and the Mashkich on the yeshiva, as well as the Balabatim that lived in Radin. Everybody packed it in to hear the Chafetz Chaim give his shmuz. Barely ever could you even hear him, because the Chafetz Chaim spoke really low, right, in a low voice. And it was, you know, wasn't a big room, but either way, in order to hear, you had to really stretch, etc. But it was a pella. He said he didn't understand it. The room should not have been able to fit. And he says that's when Hechzik Mu'adiz HaMerubah happened. And again, this is in Chutzlar. It's in Radin, in Russia, right? But Hechzik Mu'adiz HaMerubah was able to happen over here. Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz, famed Mashkiach, heard Rabbi Chanan Wasserman talking about this. And he said to him, he said, maybe it wasn't such a miracle. Maybe not everybody showed up. Chanan Wasserman was shocked. He turned to him and he said, the Chafetz Chaim is speaking on Shabbos by Shalosh Shudas, and people aren't going to show up. Everyone showed up. Everyone was there. That's what he told Rabbi Yerucham Levavitz. And it makes sense. So again, we have the idea of Hechzik Mu'adiz HaMerubah. We're going to end with this. A person sent a letter. I'm going to skip right for right now the Tosefes Bracha on the Torah Tamima. It's an awesome verse. But the Tosefes Bracha on the Torah Tamima, both Reb Baruch Epshtein, he wrote both of those Sfarim. They go into a whole thing of what kol means. Maybe kol doesn't mean everyone. Maybe kol means some of them. But it's against the flow of the shir. So I'm not going to go through them right now. But there is a Tosefes Bracha that says not everybody was there. Person sent a letter to Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein asking his opinion on Shaila that comes up at least twice a year. On Shabbos Shuvah and Shabbos Agadol, the Rav of every shul gets up to Darshan. And he stands up to Darshan about something in Halacha before the Ke'ila, the Halacha, and I got it. And we're coming up to the Shabbos Agadol Drush in another couple weeks. So the Rav would get up and say something. This person felt he would gain more by staying in the base medrash instead. I don't need to go to the Shmooze. I'm not gaining anything from the rabbi's Shmooze. So he's speaking to the other people. I can sit and learn. Why don't I go sit and learn in the base medrash instead of going? That's what this Bachar asks. And truth is, if you go to, you live in Eretz Yisrael. When I was living there in Ramat Eshkol, this is before Ramat Eshkol was filled with from Yidden, it was not back then. In my building, I had my original building, I was the only from person. Eventually, I moved to a building that had two other from people in it, but there were four other people that weren't from Bechlal. It was a difficult matzah back then. So I was looking for a Shabbos Agadol Drasha, and I couldn't find one. I found one in one of the more modern shuls. They had one over there, but the more yeshiva shuls didn't really have one, or they had like a 5-minute one in the middle of, you know, right after Shacharis. It just wasn't geshmak. I wanted like a good hour-long Shabbos Agadol Drasha. They told me that Rev Eisenstein in Malatafina would give, and they told me about somebody else, but I wanted one that was right near me. I didn't want to have to walk 20 to 25 minutes to be able to get there. I said, I just want one over there. In the end, I did. I found one that I liked that I kept going back to, etc. But it was interesting. Like, what do you do? Are you supposed to go, or what do you do? So he asked what the Rav suggested. Should he go or should he not? He brought down a Chassam Sofer, again, the Chassam Sofer in Parshas Matos. So he says there are certainly times where you can exchange Divrei Torah with your friend and you gain a ton. You talk Divrei Torah together with somebody else and you gain a ton. You learn one thing, he learns the other, and everyone gains. But there are times, he says, where you're marbe bischeira. Your marba bischeira, you add on to the merchandise you have, but you don't gain it all. When would that be? For example, this is what the Chassam Sofer says. When a chacham is darshaning in shul, teaching people what they should and they shouldn't be doing, and a person says to his friend, how about this? You go to the drasha, listen to what the Rav says, I'll sit and learn in the base medrash. You tell me what the Rav says, I'll tell you what I learned in the base medrash. Now think about that. What's the problem? They doubled up, right? I learned X, you learn Y, and we'll teach each other about it, so therefore we're not losing it all. Why can't we go ahead and do that? Says the Chassam Sofer, horrible idea. You cannot compare learning from a Rav to learning from his Talmud. A Rav is darshaning l'kavod shemayim, says the Chassam Sofer, and is given extra siyata d'shmaya at the moment when he's teaching. There's a siyata d'shmaya there. So when the Rav is standing up in shul and giving over a drasha, even if you don't understand every word, but there's extra siyata d'shmaya there. You're learning together with a group of people. You're getting it from the mouth of someone who's like a malach. And when you get that from somebody, then there's something extra over there. He could be saying amazing things. And even if somebody comes back later on and tells you what the Rav says, you might be missing out on the entire point. You might be missing an entire nuance that the Rav said that was completely different from everything else. You have the Shekhinah in the throat of the Rav, says the Chassam Sofer. How could you not be there? You can't get that from a Talmud who's telling over the Rav's drasha. He said, based on that, marba b'schayra, you're adding onto the schayra, you're losing out on everything. You don't gain anything whatsoever. And based on that, it would seem, said Rabbi Yosef Zilberstein, to be part of the Kila, go to the Rav's speech, even if you're going to gain more by learning in your base medrash, by sitting down and learning something by your own in your base medrash. The Rav is there, and you're gaining so much from him, even the stuff that you don't even realize you're gaining by being part of a kehila that's sitting together and darshaning from the Rav itself. Ask me right after. We're going to stop with this, guys. Have a great Shabbos.